Did you push the button?
I pushed the button.
Really pushing buttons.
Welcome, welcome. Yes, indeed, the button has been pushed. This just means you get to hear our dulcet tones in their actual, real, not squished down recording style.
Good evening, listeners.
Welcome to Full Spectrum Cycling number 49 here at the
49.
Everyday Cycle Studio in beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Well, got JK to my right.
Ahoy.
Dave Slabowski is joining us today in the studio here.
I'm back.
He's back. And Tony, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Newly full-time working Tony.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, boy. It can't be a yeah already, can it?
It's brutal.
Oh, boy.
Holy shit. It's a lot more than I was expecting.
That's why you're getting the big bucks.
Yep. Whatever you say.
All right, then. Well, what the heck's going on out there?
Well, I just got back from Wisconsin's great snowy Northwoods. I spent a week camping up at Rome Adventure Base Camp in Sealy, and rode the fat bike trails there, the Kamba groomed fat bike trails, and then I went over to Windman Trails by Manitouish Waters and Winchester and rode their groomed trails, and it was it's unbelievably dialed up there right now. The trails are so hard, the deer tracks on them don't even sink in.
Wow.
So it's fast.
I was going to say, it's got to be really fast.
It's fast, and, well, I mean, there's a lot of up and down there. So for an old guy like me, I'm still not very fast. But the trails are fast and just gorgeous. If you fall off the trails, you're in 3 feet of powder. So, but on the trail, it's just rock solid.
Do you know this from fact?
Yes. I tipped over once, and I had my dog up there with me, and then he tried to go off trail once and quickly found himself, you know, buried.
So. Post-holing all over the place.
So, the trails are just amazing. So, I was camping at Rome Adventure Base Camp. For our listeners that don't know what that is, it's run by Mo and Suzanne Montgomery up in, it's on Janet Road, just off of 00, very close to the Sawmill Saloon.
Sure.
It's a campground, but then they've also got four cabins. They're heated and have electricity. There's heated showers. There's a sauna and there's flush toilets. I was in a tent, but they have those options, and it's there. You can ski out onto the Berkey Trail, and Sealy Pass Trail is right at the end of the driveway. Wow. So so you can camp if you want in a tent, but you always have like that support there of like, oh, I can get water. Oh, there's a hot shower. I'm going to sit in the sauna because it's, you know, 9 below 0 outside.
Right.
And it's ski in, bike
that
out.
Sounds pretty darn fantastic.
The cabins are all heated with a wood outdoor boiler, you know. And then they've got solar arrays, and then they have a diesel generator for backup in case they have like long periods of clouds and stuff. But it's
like this winter.
Yeah, and so everything's hydronically heated. It's all, you know, the cabins, like, they sleep six. They're just very Scandinavian.
Yeah,
designed.
That's what I was going to, having looked at them on the site, they look definitely Scandinavian.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great place to go. It's a really great location. And then, you know, you've got the sawmill right down the road. So if you don't want to cook all your meals out or something like that, you're right there.
I've eaten there twice in a day before.
Yeah, so
and it's almost, it's like halfway between Cable and Hayward.
Yes,
right? Pretty much.
Is,
almost.
Yeah.
Almost dead center in there.
Leonard Lodge used to be where I stayed all the time, which is back behind. It's
right on,
the old school right behind. It's run by the folks that own Cindy and Sean at the Sawmill Saloon. And that's where I used to always stay. But since Rome opened up, I've been there. So I was in a hot tent. I have a titanium goat wood stove. And I have a tent and everything. I was testing gear for winter bike packing. So, and with my dog, who's never gone out in winter bike packing experience either. He runs the trails with me around here all the time, but never spent a week you know, out in the snow. So
I know you probably took some photos up there.
I did. If you want, I can share.
Share one or two, just so people
can put them. You can put them on your.
Put them in the show notes.
Link. Yeah, sure.
I had a very sunny February, according to my solar array.
Oh boy,
like way sunnier than last year in February.
Nice.
So everything worked out great. I mean, the riding was obviously stupendous, and my gear all worked out pretty well. My dog situation is not quite, you know, 9 below. He's great around here when it's 20 degrees out, but 9 below, he was not real comfortable with that. Yeah, he spent most of his time curled up inside a 0 degree sleeping bag.
So what's the tent you're using?
I have a very inexpensive Lux hiking gear teepee tent, and it's got a little I bought a little titanium wood, so everything like fits on my bike. It rolls up incredibly small. The tent isn't super tiny, you know, it's that rule of cycling, right? You can have two things, you know, light / small, inexpensive or big, and this pick two, right?
Right.
So this is the inexpensive tent. I wanted to try it. It worked out great though. I like it. It's just a little bulky to carry around with a 0 degree bag too, which is bulky. And so like, I think what I'm going to do is I borrowed a buddy's sewing machine. It's my new thing now. And I'm going to sew.
Hey, we need some patches sewn on coats.
I'm not very good yet, but I'm going to sew a stove jack in my, very packable, very light, hyperlight mountain gear, Dyneema, tent, which they don't recommend because Dyneema melting point of, that's Cuban fiber, now called Dyneema, is like half that of Sil nylon and Cordura and stuff like that. So I don't really recommend it, but I mean, that stuff melts if a spark hits my regular tent anyway at all. It's not flammable. It just melts easier.
Okay, so sure. Be Dave Lunds wrapped up in your tent by the fire and getting holes poked in it.
I'll just be careful. So
you're using a full bag, right? Not a, like a quilt and a sleeping pad system?
I have a Big Agnes 0 degree bag, so they have that flex pad thing that you can put a pad so you don't slide off. That was a problem with my dog. My dog does not have one of those. So, and I woke up the first night we were sleeping around 3 a.m. I heard my dog rustle around inside the tent, and his bag had slid off his sleeping pad that I brought for him, and he was now shivering, melted into a little depression in the snow that we were camping.
Poor guy.
Oh, wow.
So I had to warm him up in the truck a little bit after that. He didn't really seem to enjoy the sitting around in camp. Maybe it was because he couldn't wander around in the woods like normal either, though, like because the snow, it was just walls of snow that he couldn't do anything with. Mm-hmm. So not quite sure what the deal with him is in winter camping is. But my gear worked great. I'm going to modify that one tent, and then I think I've got a pretty dialed gear setup for doing multi-day trips up there.
Sweet. Winter. I've got an old school 0 degree down bag that I know works great. I just been messing around with the kind of the quilt system, and Big Agnes makes one that's pretty cool because what I always had a problem with previously, like I'd open my sleeping bag up because I'm so warm and then my feet would be sticking out and they'd get cold. So the quilt system has like the bottom
box,
2 feet has a box for your feet where it's cool.
Key. I have an enlightened equipment, like 30 degree quilt like that. I like it. And it straps to the bag too, so you don't fall off.
Right. You need to use it with a sleeping pad usually. Right.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. It straps to the pad. I like the quilt system. It's just, I've had this Big Agnes bag for a while, so I'm not going to get it.
Hey, Big Agnes stuff is good.
Yeah. It's a 2+ pound 0 degree bag. So that's a pretty light.
Do you think when she was a little girl, they called her Big Agnes?
I don't know. I make some nice stuff. I have not used the new Big Agnes tent enough yet. I have the old seed house from 8 years ago something.
Nice. I had one of those.
What I didn't like about it and why I got the new tent, which is their copper or something or other.
Copper spur,
especially with the bike packing poles, which is really small.
Oh, you got it with the bike packing poles?
Right over there. We can go look at it. Yeah. So the seed house, you had to climb in the end of it. And I was never a big fan of that. Plus, it's really small. I could not have a dog in there. I'm allergic to dogs anyway, so I wouldn't have one in there anyhow. But you couldn't even have another person in there, really.
Right.
And the new copper spur.
You could fit another person in there.
Well, they're basically the same size, but the new one is twice as big inside.
More volume.
Instead of just barely sitting up with the tent over your head, you can sit up. And it has two really nice vestibules outside and right. Doors on either side.
On either side, yeah.
And the footprint goes outside into the vestibule, so you're not putting your stuff in dirt and whatnot.
Those things have been really
it's dialed.
Yeah, they've got their that system down, and it is an ideal bike packing tent. Winter camping though, I don't use floors in my tents, so they're all just floorless tents. Just in general, you don't need one in the winter. You don't need screens for bugs. You don't need any of that. And then with my stove, the little wood stove that I have, it slowly melts into the ground as it gets hot. So you wouldn't really want that with a floor in your tent.
Anyway. Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
My summer tents though have floors. I am a anti bug guy, and I don't. I know people do the tarps and things like that in the summertime. No. Man, the bugs are just so bad up north.
Yeah,
and
both of those.
Tennessee hammock, man.
Yeah, both of those big Agnes, you can set them up with just the fly and the footprint. Right. But I'm like, I'm gonna keep the bugs out. Thanks very much.
The weight penalty is not that much. You know, you're talking about a tiny little tent anyway. So why not enjoy a bug-free environment? Is my philosophy in the summertime or spring.
I had that philosophy year round.
So the whole Rome trip, are you still planning on some kind of event type of an idea?
I would really love to have a rendezvous event type thing where a bunch of people come and they winter camp and we sort of look at each other's gear and see what you're doing, how you're doing, how are you making your coffee in the morning, and what tent are you using? Oh, do you have a wood stove? No, I don't use one. I'd love to do that. But, you know, finding people that want to winter camp is, I think I have to cast a very wide net.
Yeah, well, you had emailed me and said, did I want to go? And it was like, well, I got to be at the shop for three of those days.
Yeah.
So I could have left Friday and been up there for 2 days. And I'm like, I'm not going to drive 6 hours for 2 days.
Right. I get it.
I would want to make it, 5 days.
Well, what I would like to do is I'd like to try to plan it. You know, I enjoy it whether anybody else shows up or not.
Sure.
I don't really care. So I would like to try to plan it again for next year, put a date on the calendar and try to promote it and actually see if anybody else shows up. If they don't, I'm still going. But
that's a good way to do it.
And there's no harm in promoting it. And if somebody wants to join us, they can. So,
cool. Yeah,
seems legit.
Make it January or February. It's a pretty good bet.
One of the things that I learned that's kind of a key, so Rome, they have tent camping spots that are specific tent camping spots, and the rest of them are just sort of drive-in camping spots for people with like RVs or campers or something like that.
And clamping.
They had so much snow this year that they didn't plow any of their tent camping spots. They just plowed half of the RV spots, the pull-in trailer spots. So frozen winter ground with compacted gravel underneath and tent stakes don't really go well together. So I knew that from previous experience. And what I brought this time, which is what worked the last time too, is I have like these 6-inch galvanized twist nails. So they're just a heavy galvanized nail with a twist in it.
Like a dog leash thing that you'd put in the ground?
Kind of an idea? It's just twist. It's not an actual corkscrew
thing.
It's just got a twist to it. And I have a little hatchet that I always bring with me. And so I tested that out in my backyard, which is easier to pound into than the compacted gravel. Mm-hmm. And I still had trouble getting them out at the end. So my solution was I ground a slot in my hatchet, so it's now like it's got a little spot that the nail can fit in, mm-hmm. and it fits in tight, and then I can pull it out and sort of with a twist too, because they got twists.
Means
and
you don't have to take your DeWalt hammer drill up there to try and get it out.
honestly, that would be an ideal scenario for that. Like, use some long screws and just use a battery.
I
mean,
I can brap right into the concrete wall with a freaking hammer drill.
That would be
certainly
ideal for like, if we wanted to do an actual Rome rendezvous and people have to worry about it. But I'm trying to figure out like a scenario where like I'm actually taking this gear and I'm going to go on a multi-day trip and I'm going to move from point to point. And then what do I do? I don't want to bring a battery powered impact driver with me on a bike pack.
That's what Spinner's for with the big fat dummy. He just put it in his bag on the other side of the podcasting gear and don't worry about it.
You won't even notice.
You know, speaking of people doing multi-day winter cold things, it's the ITI starts this weekend. Sunday is the rollout for the Iditarod Trail Invitational.
And do you know that we here in Milwaukee are blessed to have the former executive director of the Iditarod lives in Milwaukee, and that is Willie Caritas. He works for Rails to Trails Conservancy now, and he's running the Route of the Badger project here, and he, for years, was in charge of the Iditarod.
Neat.
He lived up there. He was also in charge of Denali Park. He was at Denali Park as
well. Wow, that'd be a guy to have on the show since he's right here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the Route of the Badger thing is an interesting
topic
as well.
The Route of the Badger.
So, yeah.
I don't want to be on that route. The Nova Badgers are mean motherfuckers.
So, yeah, so maybe we get Willie on this side. We can talk Iditarod and sled dogs. And oh, that was one thing. So that was another weird thing with my dog. My dog normally doesn't have problem with cold, and so I don't have, like, booties for his feet or anything, but we got up there and like suddenly pause. 5 below or whatever, and he was doing that little dance with his paws. Yeah. But you're in God's country in the Northwoods, so 3 miles away is affordable sled dogs, where they manufacture affordable dog sledding, where they manufacture dog sledding equipment at a guy's house who's a former, well, he still has 12 huskies and stuff. So he still runs
booties for you.
He didn't have them. I called him up. He's like, well, but I can sew them up for you. So I went over to his place, and he sewed them up, measured cowboy's feet, and sewed them up.
Wow.
I
was like,
custom, baby.
Maybe he could sew some patches on our coats.
So if you're ever, and he makes some very cool sleds. He had a whole bunch of them that he was shipping off to Alaska Brewing. And I was like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, oh, they stick them in, you know, in liquor stores, and they use them as displays,
like props,
yeah, for their beer.
And why wouldn't they just find some cheap ass knockoff to do that with?
I don't, his stuff,
beer.
Well, he said beer, so it is top of the hill right now.
Top of the hill.
Top of the hill.
So and I asked him, I was like, well, what do they do with the dog sleds afterwards? He's like, you know, I've never asked him.
Wow. Speaking of dogs, where is this a dog beer? No, Big Head.
Big Head.
Isn't that right up by Dave in Wauwatosa, Big Head Brewing? Mm-hmm. This is their hazy double IPA. So this has got some chutzpah.
You aren't slamming this unless you're, yeah, this is strong.
8.2% on the ABV scale.
That's a
shout out to Big Head.
Yeah. Have you been over there?
And then north?
Yeah. I mean, they're right off of State Street, right on the corner of, you know, where Willow Glen is, that they're,
the place where I always get lost, right?
Yeah.
Bartolotta's.
That's the problem with Tosa for me, is I just don't go into the little twisty part all that often. And I'm like, oh, I want to get to there from, and I got to go all the way around.
They've got the sort of the hill, and, you know, there's, you know, the river and the train tracks.
Yep.
A lot of stuff that doesn't.
You know, having cycled around there now quite a bit, I've actually got a pretty good handle on it, but it's way easier to bike through there for me than it is to drive a car through there.
It's easier than Waukesha, though, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God.
Hell no.
That plus, place, you know, you're in Waukesha. It's right there and there.
You just need the Ronsta tour guide out there.
Right.
Yeah. No, I worked with a guy who was, he just got hired. He was looking for a place to live, move, you know, and he was scouting out in Waukesha, and he got, he couldn't get out of there because it was like just one way. He's like, he called his wife. He's like, I might just get a place here because I can't leave.
it happened to me once. I kept ending up back at the gazebo.
It's always that damn gazebo.
I did have a mind altering substance flowing through my at the time, though, so I can't blame it all on Waukesha.
Yeah,
at least not that time,
right?
Yeah, there was a tennis shop, Cream City Tennis, or
Cream City Rackets. I got my second tattoo in Waukesha,
and Black Dragon.
Yeah,
I almost got my first there. Still canvas.
Wait, clean. No, I'm wrong.
Yeah, American. Me too. Clean canvas.
American, which is right by Black Dragon.
Okay,
but yeah. So, who do we have to thank for this beer?
Mike Ladowski came in today. Just a little adjustment on the wife's new ice cream truck.
And, those wheels. They just bring that beautiful bike even better.
The happy dance bike.
That was amazing. I don't know if you saw my comment on that post. I thought they're amazing too. That really totally makes that bike kill. It's a gorgeous color anyway.
Right.
You know, but that really, really dialed in.
Yeah, and that was a Raphael job.
Sam, good.
Somebody made the comment about it, the rug brings the room, you know, together, and which brought me to my, like, I am organizing a new fundraising ride this spring, It's going to be called the Dude Abides ride.
Dude Abides.
It's gonna
some white Russians and whatnot.
It's gonna have a. I think I will try to make it a fundraising ride, not just a free ride. Like maybe raise $25 or something, and raise money for a Chris Cagle Foundation or something like that.
Sure, sure.
But
as long as it doesn't clash with the Crusher ride, we'll have to coordinate.
Right. So and the way I think the ride's going to work is I think we'll if we do it like for the Chris Cagle Foundation, we'll maybe start in the parking lot at the new Bayview Wheel and Sprocket, which is looking pretty cool. If anybody has been over there, it looks pretty amazing.
Stepped foot in yet.
And then it's not open yet, but it's pretty cool looking. It's going to be a destination bike shop. But
this is a destination bike shop.
It is.
of a different 1/10 or 1/20 the size kind of deal.
Isn't that right by Baby Boomers?
It's on that Richard Street.
Just east of there, kind of, yeah.
Beecher, one block.
Yeah, Baby Boomers. Right
west. Yeah. Wow, I didn't realize it was only that far into Bayview.
Yeah, that Baby Boomers is, what ride did we start there? The Goonies ride?
It was Biketoberfest.
That was a blast.
It's an interesting bar because it's called Baby Boomers, and there actually are babies in there. Yeah. It isn't just for boomers. There's actually little baby kids at the bar. It's like, that's outside Milwaukee.
for sure.
So the Dude Abide rides, the format is going to be, we're going to go, and this ride, it's based around bowling, of course, because it's the Big Lebowski. So we're going to have a tour of different bowling alleys. I'm going to try to work it out with the bowling alleys ahead of time where everybody on the ride is allowed one free frame. So you get a strike, you get one ball, you get your spare. And then you just track that. We'll track that on a little card. And at the end of the ride, we're going to have a raffle and everybody puts in their name with their score. And then you win a rug.
Nice.
At the end of the ride. And then we'll also have a costume competition. I think it'll be an individual costume competition.
Nobody
fucks with it.
and then a full cast. Woo! A full cast competition. So like if you bring three nihilists and a marmot and I'm talking at Great Lakes Distillery, I think next Friday they already have like this small Day of the Dude party where they do like a white Russian thing or something like that. So that's like in a week or something already. But I talked to Guy and Jen, the event coordinator there, and said, hey, would be a great place for us to end this party if we're going to be on the south side. So I think we'll end there, and that's where we'll have the comp.
Well, if you're going to bowl, don't forget Falcon.
Well, Holler I'm going to stick to the south side, I think. Holler so the House first year, sure. it'll be Bayview Bowl. It'll be Donnie's, which is another real old, like, six-lane alley on the south side. Holler House, and then Kaz's, and then back. And then if we move...
Rest in pins, Marcy.
Then next year we move the ride to River West or something. We add Bayview Bowl add the Falcon and go to Landmark. And I don't know, is there another bowling alley around here?
Yeah.
The one in Silver Springs closed, right? Port?
Yeah, that one's long closed.
We could go to Regano's because there's two lanes in the basement, even though they're not open.
At the Roman Coin?
Yeah.
You know, that was built in 1880 or somewhere around there by Captain Frederick Pabst.
I believe it's the actual oldest existing bowling lanes. And Holler House gets the oldest continuously
operating.
I think Regano's.
Or sanctioned, maybe even.
Yeah, I think Regano's is... Roman Coin is the
I know a guy that fell through the trap door from the first floor down to the basement there and did not fare well. I mean, they didn't have any of the safety things that you would have now, and there was a trap door to load kegs down in the basement or whatever, and he just kind of was blah, 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 and bam, right down through there. I think they closed that off now.
Oops. I'm sure they did.
And they put windows in the freaking joint.
It's amazing.
In the olden days, there was not a window on the west side of the building.
Yeah. I don't know if you can go there, though. You might get a little allergy attack.
There's a lot of freaking dogs in there.
You can stand outside.
I usually do go out there in the summer and sit outside and watch Brady Street pass by.
Michael...
Horny?
Horny's birthday party. He yelled at my dog at Roman's.
So
my dog was barking.
Mike Horn.
Mike Horn. He yelled at him like, "Shut up!" I'm like, dude, there's like 15 more bars in this block you can go to. Leave my dog alone. She likes you. Pet her.
Yeah. So, yeah. The coin is interesting to navigate. You definitely figure out.
It's a place.
You definitely get the dog to owner relationship ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. It's like, yeah. Wow. Okay.
They say the more a person's around their dog, the more they look and act like them. Mm-hmm. This is case in point.
Yeah. So when there were some asshole dogs, and I was like, oh, shit. There's some assholes I'm dealing with in this place right now.
Still an awesome building.
Yes.
And definitely
singular experience at that one time. But it was like eight dogs and eight owners that were all independent, but all horrible. Same. Yeah, it was.
I think, I don't know if this is my question of the week, but it is now because Dave's here, and Dave's a guy that he does a lot of perusing on the web and goes to some websites that he likes a lot, like bikepacking.com and whatnot. I get feeds, like an RSS feed of a bunch of different sites, and I keep seeing stuff like here's one of the headlines. The plus tire trend is deflating. Plus tires are dead now too? ? And I'm like, is this just a doom and gloom thing, or is it a clickbait thing? Is it just something to get people to read it, or what the heck is with these sites that have stupid shit like that? This was on Single Tracks too, which I don't even think is one of the most egregious crappy bike websites out there.
Yeah, I can't believe that's. I mean, you know, if you want to follow market trends, if you read bicycle retailer industry news or, you know, any of those things, if you know the tire sales statistics and the, you know, the category statistics for plus, maybe plus bikes are down now or something.
And this would be something to, hey, maybe Energize. Hey, there's an idea here. And
but, you know, the value of, I believe the value of, you know, what we've seen, hey, look what we've seen in entire, you know, evolution. We've got everything now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, from 5-inch to, you know, nobody rides 18s anymore, but you know, you can still buy them.
What the fuck's an 18?
18 sees, you know, 700.
Oh, God, yeah, okay, there you go. Those,
the narrowest tires some. That when you're trying to be super fast back in the old days.
Well, even Tour de France guys don't ride those anymore.
No, and it's been proven that fatter tires, you know, roll just as fast in a lot of regards.
Especially tubeless.
Yeah, right. So I can't believe that's true.
It's an interesting read. I'll have a link in the show notes just because they're getting different different perspectives. Like the salsa guys are saying, no, we still sell, you know, a pretty good chunk. And I know that it's not a huge percentage wise amount of the bikes sold, but I just thought, I mean, come on, really?
Right.
Trend died quickly, and 29ers are continuing to push 27.5 out of the picture, not even plus. And part of the argument is 29ers have gotten more playful and they're designed better now and they don't ride like a wagon wheel anymore and blah, 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 which I get. But I think this is definitely biased towards the full suspension going down a hill crowd more than people riding across their state or their town on a little bit more human-sized trails.
Right. And does the article mention anything about 2.6 29er tires?
Yeah, that's kind of...
Because like, okay, so... Instead of 3-inch, 2.6 is more popular on the enduro downhill bikes and stuff like that. I'm like, well, okay, so that makes sense. But, you know,
for 2% of people.
Yeah, I was just trying to, I mean, and this is just one example, and I hate to single out Single Tracks because I think they do a pretty good job, but it just, I constantly see kind of sensationalized headlines that are trying to just suck you in because they need the eyeballs.
I'm happy for all the variety of tire options that we have these days. And, you know, I mean, I have a wall of bikes in my basement and they go from fat to skinny and there are different tools for different jobs. And I pull out one makes the most sense.
Are they actually arranged from fat to skinny?
They are.
Kind of like all the black shirts are in the same spot and all the off black shirts and then all of the charcoal colored shirts
I'm
are in
sorry,
the same
but
spot.
I have to throw this out and I almost never do. Picture it didn't happen. I want to see a picture of this basement with the bikes arranged like this. We'll put it in the notes.
All right. All right,
I'll do
that.
So I don't think fat tires are dead.
It better not be.
Yeah,
I don't think fat bikes are dead. I don't think any tires are dead.
You do know that yesterday was Fat Tuesday, right?
Yes.
Remember what happened 7 years ago on Fat Tuesday?
That was your injury day.
That was my injury
day. That was your injury day.
It was not punschke related, though.
I had had a beautifully delicious punschke just prior to a really... The best part about that was Colin Ford seeing my foot. He was just like, he almost threw up. It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Thank you for being able to drive a stick, Greg, and taking my car home for me.
No worries.
The Rays. So,
and you ran into a guy that witnessed your ragdoll episode 9 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 9 years ago.
That's what my Wayback Machine said when I saw it on Facebook Place.
Yeah. Is Fat Tuesday like a dangerous...
This was earlier. This was on January 1st.
This was on New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, right.
Going down to the Polar Bear and going down the St. Mary's Hill instead of the street, the hill.
Right, sure.
And there's a little rut, and I went. And
that's because he followed me over the edge with
A lemming.
Thinking.
just lemming it. Okay. Hadn't taken the rip before, so... So yeah, he was down by the beach. He just looks back the other way. He's like, I see this bike, and then all of a sudden I see some speed wobbles, and then a little bit more, and then all of a sudden, whoa! He just turned somersault, and then
he seriously passed me in the air. Like upside down because
just I was a rag doll.
Yeah, it was.
And well, it was just so weird to hear this from just a complete random, just a complete damn stranger. And I was like, wait, what?
Wait, when was this?
He was like, yeah, it was like 10 years ago. And yeah, it was over down by Bradford. And I'm like, yeah, that was me, dude. And I'm like, I was amazed. I was amazed because I remember when I was like cognizant finally after the fact, I was like, somebody had to take a picture.
I got one of you on the stretcher, but that's as far as I got.
Exactly. Or just like, but like somebody, there was so many people walking down those damn stairs that I was like, I had to run into somebody that was witness to that shit. It only took me 9 years to run into them.
That's only the second time I thought somebody might actually have perished because he was knocked out for a little bit and came to and whatnot. And the other time I thought somebody was almost dead is when Spinner slammed Lunds into the ground.
Oh, that picture?
I thought for sure that he broke Dave's neck. I'm like, oh, that's not going to be good. But all is well that ends well, I guess.
Hey, yeah.
So I was, that just reminds me of this. I was over at a friend's house up in the cable, when I was up by cable in Hayward area. And his kids have mountain bikes, and they've built their own trails on their property, just a small property, but they built their own trails. His house has got a green, a grass roof on his house. Sweet and dreams. So they have a ladder on one side of their house where it's not an earth shelter home, right? It's just a regular house, but he put a green roof on it. And so they have a ladder, they climb up a ladder leaning against the
Your father house. Approves of this, huh?
And they climb up to the top of the house and they jump off the roof of the house they've built a snow ramp on the other side and then it goes down around. They've got teeter totters. They've got boards. They've got trees that they've built balance beams out of that are 4 inches wide and not straight because they're trees just like cut in half. 4 inches wide on top of posts that they ride around.
How old are these Groms?
One of them looked like he was about 12 or 11, and the other one looked like he was about seven, maybe.
So what you're saying is your friend is the greatest dad in the world.
I'm standing there talking to him, and the kid like jumps off, hucks off the roof of the house, and I was just like, make your own fun in the Northwoods.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Teeter-totters, the whole shebang.
I remember sledding
out of 9-1 ready.
And no helmets. No helmets,
Those are the kids that live forever, though. That's how we all got here.
Reminded me of my childhood, right? Yeah. I never had helmets and jumps and ramps and stuff like that. I did have two skull fractures, so take a lesson.
That would explain a lot.
Three broken collarbones.
Well, since we're just talking about bike stuff here today, actually, and not other associated stuff, were you at the Humboldt?
I was. I was.
So as we got the thing here. The Humboldt Street, our street right down the block is going to be redone.
Reconstructed.
Reconstructed, which it's in dire
need
of. It
happens once every 50 years or so with a street.
So how, and I know that our street just to the west is going to be a bike boulevard. So we're in a really good spot hopefully. Right here, hopefully. It will, 2020, yeah. right? It's supposed to start. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. there.
It's going
to
happen.
It will.
And so I'm just wondering, and if I can get a link to this PDF, that would be cool. How much of this stuff in this complete streets kind of thing is happening in other cities and it's working, you know, really well. And I think we had a good thing going here for a little while and then it kind of slowed down and now it's picking back up again. And
so Humboldt is a unique arterial because it's, a very important, corridor for in a the neighborhood in Milwaukee that has the highest percent, your neighborhood here, River West, that has the highest percentage of people that ride bikes for transportation anywhere in the city. So it's a key important corridor for cycling. It's also a key transportation corridor for transit users. It's a very important bus route. It connects to the university, and lots of people take the bus to the university. So it has a couple of, you know, and then there's a lot of parks and stuff. So the east-west crossings for pedestrians are very important on the street as well. It carries a significant, it's an arterial street, a major street.
They call it a minor arterial.
A minor arterial?
At 14,900 cars per day.
Well, like National Avenue or something's like, or Capitol's like 25,000.
Yeah, it still seems like it's not that minor when I'm on it.
Right. So 2 years ago was the first public information meeting when the project was first given a project number and we're going to do this, right? So 2 years ago, apparently the city came with some proposed plans and they weren't particularly progressive. They included maintaining the bike lane on it. But one of the key elements of the plans was to widen the travel lane to like 12 feet. It's a major transit
negatory
route,
dumb buddy.
And that to do that, they had to narrow the planted boulevard,
yeah, the boulevard
a little bit. And so that was the primary, I wasn't at that meeting, but I talked to a number of people here tonight who were, and that was the primary discussion then at that, like, don't narrow the boulevard, narrow the travel lane so that there's less speeding,
yeah,
and keep the bike lane, and you know, everybody wants to keep the parking and they don't want to lose any trees and all that sort of stuff. So DPW did respect to them, they did listen to that, and their plans that I saw tonight essentially reflected that. They had a significant number of pedestrian crossing improvements, curb extensions at almost pretty much every intersection. Mm,
that's huge because of the Milwaukee slide, you
right,
know.
And, yeah. And narrow, you know, they maintaining that 10-foot sort of travel lane. There is a 1-foot gutter pan on each side, so it's technically 11-foot lane, but you know, it's a major transit route, so buses are 10 feet wide, yeah. You know, so I feel like DPW kind of did everything that people asked for in this. However, I made the argument, I don't know if you saw
I saw your post.
The email that I sent the alderman and the commissioner. I said, you know, respectfully, like, I get that this is there's lots of constraints here. You know, there's trees in the middle of that boulevard, you know,
sure.
there's trees on the side. There's parking that a lot of people have multi-unit house, it's not all single family, so there's multiple cars per home, so parking's important for those people still. I get all there's underground utility constraints and things like that. There's lots of constraints here. I said, however, it's a very, very important route, and this is a generational opportunity to reimagine an important transportation corridor, and I feel like there is a way to actually make protected bike lanes. You will lose most of a green boulevard median to do it, but you can take that green from the center and you move it to the buffered zone that protects the cyclist.
I see what you're getting at.
So you take that 3 foot of green out that's out in the middle next to the cars, move that between the motor vehicle travel lane and the bike lane.
That'll get rid of the Milwaukee slide.
And you've got a 3 or 4 foot. The median is about 14 feet wide.
Yeah.
13, 14 feet wide.
Yeah.
It varies a little bit. But so take 6 feet of that or 8 feet of that, put it between the motor vehicle traveling. Make that green. Maybe you can't have trees in it. You might lose those trees in the center of the boulevard.
Yeah, but you that'd be really cool.
But you could plant it. It could still be planted.
It could be beautiful.
It could be planted. It could include passive stormwater management in it. It could
absolutely.
And it could have a separated, protected bike lane, virtually the full length.
And bird scooter lane.
Right.
Well, I mean, it just to me, it makes sense to have you got people walking on the sidewalk. They're going 2.5 miles an hour. Then you got a place where there's things going 15 to 20 miles an hour. And then there's cars hopefully going 25 miles an hour or less. Right. But I mean, even the stuff that they have in this plan is way better. But I mean, the ultimate.
It's an improvement. And the DPW did what people asked them to do at the first meeting 2 years ago. And so now you've also got to remember now there's 2 years of design and planning. It's still early stages in it, technically in a design stage. It's early stages, but there's 2 years of momentum now in the current design and invested time. And so to turn that bureaucratic train would take a lot of, would take a lot.
The inertia started in 2016, if I wasn't.
Right. And, right.
Yeah.
So, and if people didn't, if people had come to that very first meeting said demanded, you know, protected bike lanes. DPW might have done more to have an option that included that, but they
didn't. I don't even think that was a buzzword that many years ago.
That's true. It's really come, you know, in the last couple of years, we've now got four or five of them here in Milwaukee, you know. Right. So it's something that, but it's only been in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Last year that's really happened.
That's right. I go out of my way to hit
DPW did not have the Department of Public Works reorganized, and they have like a multimodal unit now with a multimodal transportation manager, Mike Amson. He was there, you know, he wasn't there 2 years ago. There was just one bike ped coordinator at the time, I believe. So maybe more of these things in their full reconstructs might be proposed early on in the future for projects. I can't predict the future, obviously.
Sure.
I talked to the Alderman Kovac, and I just said, hey, you know, I understand all this. I don't blame DPW. And he was like, hey, if I surveyed the residents on Humboldt and said,
we would all sign it. And I'm not on Humboldt personally.
And said that we were going to lose the plant, the trees in the median.
Oh.
Like, he's like, I bet a lot of people would say no.
Yeah.
And
probably.
And you might. So there's 13 feet or 14 feet. How much can you take
and still save the trees?
You might not be able to. Street trees already have a pretty miserable life. So, you know, get going from 13 feet, but maybe you could. I don't know. Maybe it could still be green and you could plant stuff. Maybe if people had a...
To offset.
Yeah. We're not losing green. Yeah,
right.
We're maybe losing trees, but you're not losing green. We're just moving the green from the center where nobody gets to do anything with it closer to where people... walk and bike.
Interact.
It'd also be interesting to know what stage of life those trees are at.
Well,
given medium tree.
I believe the average street tree life is like
it's pretty
7
low.
To 10 years. Yeah. So they don't live very long. You got to replant them because they die, because they get inundated by salt and all that sort of stuff. You know,
You brought up right at the beginning of this an interesting thing. And I think this is obviously a conversation about one specific street in Milwaukee. So everybody's like, well, how does that affect me? But Dave brought up a very good point, and he said this is a generational change. And the reason I think that's important in this particular instance is the original design of Humboldt has gone back to 1965. So we're talking about something that's been there for, you know, more than 50 years.
Almost as long as you've been alive.
Quiet. There will be repercussions.
Almost as old as the show.
But that it's you know, if we do this, with this reconstruction, it's going to last for another, whatever, 40 or 50, well, until cars, until dinosaurs stop providing fuel and whatnot. Right. But it's going to have to last for that time. And things that are, this is a major thing, not just a resurfacing, which has been a miserable experience the last time they resurfaced.
There's a difference between a resurfacing and a reconstruction.
Oh, absolutely.
Reconstruction involves ripping out curbs, all that sort of stuff.
All the substrate, everything that's
underneath. Yeah.
Removing all the street.
Resurfacing, you can't move
8 inches of concrete under there.
You can't change the geometrics too much resurfacing.
Right. But, yeah, no, I think it's,
So, yeah, it's an opportunity. And anytime, anywhere, whatever town you live in where you're listening to this podcast, that you have a reconstruction of a street, that's your opportunity to make a major change. Resurfacing, like I said, they just lay a layer of asphalt. They may do a quick grind over the top, and they lay another layer of asphalt down.
It's the same
nice
street.
And pretty for
they can't. It makes
years.
It smoother and everything. And
lipstick on a pig.
They might be able to add a bike lane, or they might be able. They improve the ADA compliant, crosswalks and stuff like that with that project. But they don't change much. This is your chance, and you're not going to be able to do anything different for another 50 years. So do you want to do it? I think it's worth considering and just taking a quick pause and saying, here's what we could do. Cause I'm no longer in that position anymore at DPW. So I don't know. Well, we can't, the DOT won't let us narrow a median to this feet, or we'd lose every single tree for sure. I would like to see a proposal like, say, here's what it would take to put a protected bike lane in and try to maximize green space. And it would slow our project, and it would cost this much more, and XXX, whatever it would do, and say, is it worth it? Do we want to do it? I'd like to see that, but I can't fault DPW for not showing that, because nobody asked for it.
Yeah, and that, I think that's an interesting point here, too, is that there isn't a whole lot of public information when these processes start. You were saying if we would have brought this up 3 years ago, it maybe would have, if there was more public outcry, so to speak, for it.
The city of Milwaukee recently, adopted a complete streets policy that the Wisconsin Bike Fed had a grant to help and design. It was a nationally awarded policy, so it's a very good policy. And that includes changes to how they operate and how they present proposals and things like that. So in theory, what that should do is and that was just adopted like last year. So like the next generation of reconstruction projects should now start with like, hey, we're designing this. We're going to reconstruct the street. We're going to design it for people and goods. It's about moving people and goods. It's not about car throughput, which was the traditional way to design things. It's not about trying to keep the same that we've got. We're going to rethink this, and we're going to think about it in terms of our complete streets policy and improve. And they've done a lot of those things for this project. But so maybe there's an opportunity in the future now for all the projects to have a little bit at that first public information meeting, instead of saying we're going to go to 12-foot lanes, we're going to make it better for cars and buses and trucks, and we're going to take that out of the median, and then people get fired up, and they're not even thinking about the bikes at that point because they're worried about losing their boulevard. Maybe the next one, it's going to be like, here's two options. We can do this and this, and one of them has a protected bike lane and has all this other progressive stuff on it, and the other one doesn't. The other thing I suggested was like, hey, I don't know what the future of transit is on that corridor and what bus rapid transit in Milwaukee County is thinking. And that's a key transit route. Like, it might be an awesome place to put a bus rapid transit line on a full reconstruct. I don't know.
Streetcar tracks.
Well, I don't want to bring that one.
Exactly.
I like streetcars, but No.
I saw that pop up at one point in I think the event discussion on that, and I was
I'm a big fan
it
of
it.
It
has
them,
to be in the conversation. But
I just don't think our fair town has the population density to support much more than what it already has.
They're very expensive to do, and bus rapid transit is pretty freaking great. So I love streetcars where they have them, where they work really well. I use them all the time. I'm not opposed to ours, but there's less expensive things to do that.
It would be.
We have better ways to spend our money. As much as I love the hot,
it would be unnecessary up this way.
So hopefully we'll see. One thing that I think is interesting is like to compare it to how Milwaukee County has recently proposed some of their major projects, reconstruction projects. Menominee River Parkway. That's out by me on the west side. When that was, Milwaukee County is even more cash strapped than the city is in terms of, dollars. And so with their parks system, they're looking at a lot of streets, parkways that haven't been reconstructed in maybe 65 years or 70 years or something. So when they get to them and they know that they've got their cash strapped, they've been looking at like, how can we reduce future maintenance costs? One way to do that is to narrow these wide parkways.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so when the, what I was surprised at when the bike fed was on, an advisor on that project, the Menominee River Parkway, one of their first suggestions at their very first public information meeting to the, so that the county raised this idea, was what if we eliminate through traffic on the Menominee River Parkway at like three locations? So Burleigh and like four streets were like, you can't use this as a through route. It's freeway. A parkway. It's a neighborhood street. We're going to stop all the through traffic. That came from the county, that progressive idea. So that didn't go through. It didn't happen. What ended up being reconstructed was speed, raised crosswalks throughout the whole thing. So, and a separated bike trail along the entire route and a bunch of passive stormwater management stuff. So the end final project was still a really great project. But what my point is, like, their first proposal was, here's a really progressive thing that, what do you
we
think
would like to see done?
What do you think about it? You know, they've also done some other projects where they've completely eliminated car traffic and just turned it into a bike trail, like the connection under the highway out by West Dallas. You know, if you're riding along, you know, south of Blue Mound, where you ride into Greenfield Park, if you want to ride from the Hank Aaron into Greenfield Park. There used to be a road. That used to be a road. It wasn't a bike trail. It was a road that connected to one sort of like dead-end street kind of.
Roads make really easy bike paths. They already got the structure there.
Right. So they just got, when they had to reconstruct it, they're like, well, okay, if we narrow this to 12 feet instead of like a 40-foot road, it's going to be way cheaper in the future. And so they eliminated a road and turned it into a bike trail. So the city has done some of that, you know, road diets. They've done some of those things. So the city hasn't not done that, but I'd love to see more of that at the first public information meeting to hit people with, you know, to spark their ideas, rather than rely on the community entirely to come up with a new progressive street design. Right. You know, it's hard for the average person.
They are the pros. They should be thinking on
and give people
all options.
Hey, we can redo it just like this. We can make it better for cars and screw humans. Or we could go this other direction. Maybe they could give three options.
Cars are humans too.
You know, I'm gonna make that. You should get a sticker made.
That should be a great sticker. Sorry, Seth. It just popped in my head.
Cars are coffins?
Cars are humans. Like, cars are humans, too.
Yeah, well, and corporations have rights.
That's why I said it. That's what I was throwing out there. All right, now.
Right on. Obviously,
we've gone down a rabbit hole here.
Right? Obviously, Dave has extensive knowledge about this.
Which is why he's great to have on the show.
Yeah, and this is the most interesting show we've had in the 49 shows we've had.
Top five.
I really appreciate Dave being here, and he's got so much to say. We're definitely going to have him back here again.
I love coming down for this. What stops me from being here more is that I live on the west side.
West Side Connector.
In the winter, in the warmer weather, I'll go south. You're north of me.
Right.
But I go south, take the Hank Aaron State Trail, ride down to the lakefront, come all the way around, and come back, loop back up. But during the wintertime, I don't really want to go the long extra route. So, like, I got to ride down, like, North Avenue or Center or something like that to get down here. And
talk about the Milwaukee slide.
And especially since it's dark and crappy.
I had an escort almost my entire way down here. A car driving in front of me in the bike lane almost the entire length of North Avenue, but going slow, and because it's heavy, I was riding down at like 5:30, so it's like it's nobody. I'm going as fast as traffic is, essentially. Right. He rode in front of me, lights off, you know, clouds of dope spilling out of the windows.
Pace car in you?
I had a pace car. The
inner city escort.
Drove in the bike lane the entire
time. Have you been passed on the right yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is just freaking nuts.
And I thought that, well, hey, he's stopping somebody from passing me on the right.
Yes. There you go. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. No way.
So that's why I don't come more often.
Understood.
All right, before we wrap this up, I just want to make one shout out to one event this weekend up in Minocqua, Wisconsin.
It is the
Rip, Zip, and Sip Fat Bike Race.
Isn't the huge ass this weekend, too?
Oh, yeah, that's at Sand Valley, too.
There we go. See,
that doesn't really come up on my radar, I guess, for some reason. But no, that's why Mike and Berger were here. So they have a Le Mans style start and sledding to the finish. So
it's a fun thing.
It's at like their zip line trails up there.
Not like the River West zip line.
With some berms and some, you know, it's
if
sort of
if you're going that area, go over to Windman and ride too.
Windman. Right on, Dave. Well, thanks very much for being on the show.
It was a gas.
I mean, we'll have you obviously back again, and people will probably listen to that show.
Probably.
Next week, we'll be back without Dave, so.
No one will listen.
Warning, Will Robinson.
Whoop, whoop.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And
night.
We're going to come back at you next
Happy
week.
Happy Friday.
Show number 50. We should do something special.
50.
Yeah.
Like have two beers instead of just one.
Like something nifty.
Like 50.
I don't know.